Yeah.
I've been thinking about this stuff, and I have some great insights, and I can't for the life of me remember them.
You're ahead of the game.
It's always working on me in one way or another.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always working on you.
Yep. The hell is this about? Huh? Mm. I know there's this compulsive, like, as I started my work week this week, there was this kind of, just the need to look forward to something that sounded good, like the telephone call tonight, or, you know, well, at least we got, like, you know, Thursday at Pebble, that sounds really good, like, just
yeah.
That compulsive need to reach forward into the future to comfort me in where, from, to comfort me for where I am currently.
Well, maybe.
It's almost like a habit.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can't be really sure why, let's just say, that interest follows you around. I mean, do you...
It used to be to the next retreat, and that's pretty much gone.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't do that as much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I still do it in other ways. Like, what's
sure.
good that's going to come up in the future that, you know, I can look to?
Yeah. Yeah, your future's so bright you have to wear shades.
Yeah, supposedly, or it could just really suck.
Mm-hmm.
We really don't know.
Yeah. I mean, to, you know, to give it a, I'm not saying you're being glib or I'm being glib, but to give it any kind of glib reply, you know, is not going to be really good juice. I mean, why do you promote yourself into the so-called future and make sure you've got something cool going on?
Yeah. Hey, There was another thing that I came across in my travels this week. Monday morning, I'm at the gym, finished my workout, I'm in the locker room, and there's, like, the blue-haired contingent that's going to go into the pool next is, you know, there, and they're chatting. And one of the ladies, clearly somebody in her family, I don't know, somebody died that was close to her.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, 5 or 6 different times, her and other people said, it's the worst thing that could possibly happen. It was almost like a mantra that they were just repeating over and over and over.
Oh,
and
that's,
I was thinking about what Francine said.
That someone died, you mean?
Yeah. Yep.
Huh.
Yep. It was like they just were totally stuck on the repetition of it's terrible, it's terrible, it's terrible. And they had to repeat it to each other multiple times.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm thinking, you know, I think we have to work pretty hard to keep going on this drama thing. But actually, it wasn't all full of drama. It was pretty matter of fact. They were just all making sure that everybody agreed it was the worst thing that could happen, that it was terrible.
Well, that's...
And even if you think about it logically, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't help. It doesn't do anything. It's just a consensus reality. This is terrible. If we stopped dying, this would be a horrific place. Everybody loves babies. You really think we could just have a one-way trip into this world and nobody leave?
The trouble. The trouble with tribbles.
I'm sorry, but this rant was welling up in me as I heard this.
Yeah, no, I hope it's not over. What else you got?
I think that was it. But it really rocked me. It's like, I mean, is there, and then I go to my step meeting today. It's about, you know, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him.
Good luck with that.
I mean, who the hell do you think thinks they're running the show? Like, I'm sure some of these people were pretty religious. They're good religious people. There's no fucking room for anybody other than you and your opinions when you're just doing the mantra of this sucks. Whatever happened to open mind? Like, there's not an ounce of possibility that anything good could be happening when you and all your friends are committed to this sucks.
Was that thematic at the meeting today?
No, that was just my thinking.
Oh,
and
you were the only.
Sort of
you were
took
the only,
what I just ranted about.
You were
and
the
then
only
couched
one.
Couched it a little bit and
way.
Talked about it. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I actually did a minor rant on the incident in the locker room.
But yeah.
I toned it down a little bit because there was a lady in that meeting that recently did lose her husband, and I didn't really want to be unkind per se, but it needed to be said. We're all sitting around, it's God's will, not mine. Bullshit. Most people think it should be my will and this shouldn't happen. Bad shit shouldn't happen. Well, I got news for you. It seems to.
Yep.
And if you took another look, that might not have to be bad.
Who knows?
Yeah. I loved Francine's observation this weekend that if you just, you know, what happens if people just stop saying that death is a bad thing? You know, he'd be a saint. I love that.
Try to keep that to yourself
yeah,
at the meeting. Did you want to take up a collection so you could go join ISIS?
I don't think so. I'm telling you, man, all bets are off when you just don't buy consensus reality. All bets are off. Who the hell knows what reality is or isn't, but I
well,
kind of like messing with it a little
off
bit.
Anyway.
It's fun.
No matter what.
Yeah.
Whether you buy them or not.
You know, it's kind of a full circle. Why do we insist on having our calendar full of nourishing appointments? You know, why do we characterize life and death the way that we do? Why do we fill the psychic airspace with opinions and projections and certainties of any kind, right? Why do we engage or reply to consciousness at all?
You know what's funny? In my resistance to those people's take on this is a terrible thing,
yeah,
I was coming on just as strong in the other direction, holding on
sure
to my opinions and my, you've got such a closed mind. I was doing the exact same thing they were doing.
Yeah, yeah. Closed minds can be communicable. You know, if we participate in progressive kinds of recovery events, right? You know, we're there to lend something of ourselves to be in, you know, fellowship and support, reinforcement. But the price that you pay, of course, is that the reinforcement that you're getting from, you know, the common 12-step meeting or New Age Kumbaya gathering is, you know, apologetic reinforcement for, you know, the fantasy of self as a durable and discrete creature who is, you know, sincerely committed to not suffer so much. That's the reinforcement that you get. You don't get transcendent reinforcement, right? You get commiseration, maybe, you know, some nice fellowship around the consensus idea that we're creatures, that we have will, that there's psychological time. We don't feel so good. And together, we maybe can assist each other in looking at things differently or feeling a different way about our lives.
And wrong.
So you get together with a handful of primates, and you know you're gonna end up invariably in the consensus reality shared by most primates, or specific to the group that you're hanging out with. You know, you go to the office, and primates hang a certain way at the office. You go to church on Sunday, depending on the church, and, you know, you hang out a certain way in that environment. If you go to a rave, that's a different environment. You know, if you go to an adult swapping environment, then you have a different experience. You're in another consensus reality.
You don't. Consensus makes it sound like you have some consensus, but I mean.
Yes.
I went to the thrift store today to buy a pair of pants, apparently, and had a 15-year reunion with somebody who was working there that was, like, my best friend in high school. It's like, I didn't want this. I just wanted to get a pair of pants.
Yeah.
There was no consensus. Right. I just walked in the door and was like,
oh. That's when worlds collide.
What? Why?
Yeah. You know, everywhere that we go, constructive or entertaining or sabotaging, has a certain, you know, vibration, a certain signature. We can count on, if we're looking to count on, having a certain experience by participating in a certain event. And sometimes we can participate in an event where we've had a reliable experience and the event won't deliver. You know?
A lot of times it doesn't deliver.
No, a lot of times it doesn't deliver. Yeah. You know, the what we call the world, or the the zone of engagement, right? What's one's zone of engagement? Well, the commute to the office, you know, the relationships at the office, the relationships at home, at the concert theater. This is the, you know, the primate undulation. And if you're looking for something, I don't know, depthful, spiritual, who knows what to call it, you have to kind of search maybe far and wide for a zone of engagement that nourishes you, that speaks to your primary aspirations.
primary aspiration?
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know. And then I'm like, loitering. I just end up wherever the fuck I end up. I can't.
I'd like to claim there's some aspiration associated with hanging out here, but I don't know. I'm not hopeful, but I seem to still hang out here.
Well, you know, you consent, let's say, to make an appointment or keep an appointment.
No. I don't consent necessarily.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not insisting on it, right? If you do make an appointment and keep an appointment, we're suggesting that somehow you've consented to it, or it speaks to your aspiration or interest. So you, in a manner of speaking, right, voluntarily participate in a zone of engagement.
Are you talking from a human perspective or from some other perspective? Like I feel like from a thought-based perspective of what I think I'm going to do and how it's going to occur and my interest and attention, that doesn't really work for me, but
mm-hmm.
You're talking about from a different level.
Well, it can go either way. I mean, you can talk about, you know, human frames of reference or human appointments within the context that nothing is human and there are no appointments. Right?
Mostly.
Yeah. I mean, I'm addressing, you know, Nan's experience with people at the gym and, you know, people at a meeting or people at work. And the zone of engagement or the zone of influence that's present within the typical, right, primate universe, where we consent to behave a certain way in the company of other people. And it could turn out to be, I don't know, maybe disappointing comes to mind when we participate or engage in certain zones of influence or zones of engagement when we start to discover that this shit people are talking about and the consciousness that they are, that they're loyal to, no longer suits us. And we could end up having, you know, all kinds of rants in a good way and quarrels with how people are characterizing themselves and their lives, where we don't have any strong agreement or affinity for the, you know, the generally socially acceptable primate consciousness. I start having less of an affinity with it, and I become less apologetic with it. I don't enable it in myself or in social engagement with other people.
You don't enable it?
Yeah. In other words, you have to face the strange consequences of living true to your own understanding in a world that may not be all that friendly toward it.
Yeah, I mean, yes, but at the same time, like, when I encountered this person today, I froze, like a deer. I literally froze at the door. He didn't recognize me, so she's like, why are you freezing at the door? Like, I don't understand what's going on. But my heart was you know what I mean? The entire charade was a total charade. I had no, physiologically, I couldn't breathe, everything just collapsed.
What fun.
And I just responded however I responded. I mean...
Yeah, of course.
I didn't have much... I don't know. It just seems to be more the way that things occur. It's just this sort of strange pheromonal... I don't know. It's not really like...
Sure.
I didn't seem to have much time to be like, dreaming. It was just like, oh, Christ, what? Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, that's fun. You know, this can catch us off guard and probably does catch us off guard, you know, all the time. And we,
all the time.
And we're,
I would say it does.
Yeah. And we're kind of forced to deal with each encounter as it arises. And our, you know, psychiatric, spiritual, emotional, physiological response to what's appearing. Like there was no, you know, there was no good reason that you needed to freeze because you saw someone from 15 years in your past, but yet there was the best reason to freeze because you froze.
I went into shock, instantaneous shock.
That's fun. Yeah, that's great.
I, you know, there was no... Anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you know, I mean, we could all report on, let's say, our day or salient elements of the day and launch into some curious and, you know, profound observations from each one of those launching pads. So there was a woman who... you know, whose friend had died, and a bunch of people talking about that at the gym. And then there were, you know, people at a meeting that were talking about the encouragement to give one's will over to God. And
yeah, there's no right way to be, but there's no way to know to, you know what I mean? You can't, like, prepare for a way to be, for how you're going to be, or...
No.
Encounter. It's just totally improvisational, spontaneous.
Right.
Humanity. And you can't hold yourself accountable later for then how you behaved, because...
Well, you can try, but, you know, we end up with a quite a shitstorm of neurosis when we do that.
Yeah. But you know, those people were just doing the same thing. Those people,
of course,
seemingly talking about death and how, you know what I mean? They were spontaneously, improvisationally.
Yes, being.
Being themselves. Whatever they were, a weird group of.
Right. Yep. There's no quarrel with reality as it is presenting itself. If there's quarrel, resistance, or some degree of open or closed-mindedness, then that's all part of the right spontaneously effervescing mix. This solidity that we appear to have, which, you know, maybe makes us lonely or makes us angry or gives us regret or suffering, you know, we want to remedy ourselves or defend ourselves. We want to be spiritual or enjoy some kind of invulnerability. You know, we want to go where we go and do what we do and have it be somehow optimally pleasing to us. Or invest in practices and pursuits that would mitigate our suffering. You know, once and for all, forever. You know, this marionette has a lot of plans.
But yeah, even the plans are just, they're like weirder than that, you know?
Sure.
Like sometimes I'm kind of like, why am I still like thinking ahead and trying to plan things? And because that's just what this does sometimes. It's bizarre. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it hasn't gotten the memo.
Well, I don't even know if that even makes sense, because, you know, for some reason today I, like, had to go to the thrift store. I just had to go.
It's Tuesday.
To meet with this woman, you know, and it's like, but...
Right.
So it all is, it's just all good. It's like, whatever, it's bizarre. And then when I think about it in terms of, like, if it really was just... You know, a sort of simulation where I'm fast-forwarding through my karma or whatever. I don't know. That's just, like, a fun thing that I make up. Because I don't know what
Why
else.
Why not? Yeah. Well, like, accelerating through our karma is like going to the thrift store.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I mean, it's like, I don't know what the hell that was. It certainly wasn't about buying anything.
Well, here's the, you know, here's the curious and kind of fun dilemma of, let's say, contemplating the events of a day, right? Here you are, one is, we are in, you know, real time. This is the presentation of the great perfection. And
hello?
Hi, Suzanne.
Hey.
And we're good at reminiscing about the presentation of the great perfection from 5 minutes ago, hours ago, early this morning, you know, last weekend. We can
recalling
do that.
Recalling events that seem significant.
Yes, right? Recalling events and, you know, our, let's say, emotional... a flavor, right, of the day. You know, we might be moving through the day in a very relaxed, you know, half present, half not present way. Or we may be moving through the day in, you know, I don't know, maybe a kind of a short-tempered, you know, tight, fuse-wound way. And it's like, you know, where's Pluto? Where's Saturn? Where's Jupiter and Mars? You know, what house are they in, right? What mood are we passing through today? You know, where's the moon, right? Waxing, waning, and just how far? You know, is it high or low tide? You know, am I getting buzzed by some strong radio waves from a naval vessel, you know, off the coast of Atlanta? What did I eat? You know, was it nourishing? Was it fattening? Am I metabolizing? Have I had a good elimination this morning, or feeling a little constipated by 10:30 a.m.? Have I had my coffee or not yet? Right?
Oh, I could do it.
So there's an incredible, you know, array or consummation of vibratory forces, many of which we're not, you know, conscious of. And so what it is that we recall about the day or how we're responding to that is, right, profoundly variable.
Everything's profoundly variable.
Everything is profoundly variable. Yeah. So let's say suffering could look like our attempt to narrow down a fantastic variability, an incomprehensible variability, to a few small variables that we might like to control. And then we suffer.
Yeah, I feel like I have this quote written down on a piece of paper next to me. Unity transcends consciousness. And I was thinking about that a lot. Like, just that, even just the idea of consciousness, you have to divide something to come up with a term for anything, really. It has to be in relation to something else.
Yeah, I mean, let's say reporting on one's mood state or events of the day or how we're even feeling right now is a selection process which ignores most of the incomprehensible variability to a few so-called noticeable or conjurable truisms. And then we report on those as the substantive reality.
Yes, but that also seems to just be what we do.
No question. This, whatever mind is or isn't, it might be capable of a certain quality of, let's say, sensitivity or nuance, where it's not selective. Right? We're not being seduced to convert an incomprehensible variability into a few select encounters or moods or agreements or disagreements. You know, from the yogic perspective, that appreciation could be a portal to otherness. The pursuit of some kind of spiritual experience could be in hopes of ameliorating or even at the same time, it could include an affection for, you use the word unity.
But unity includes all the crap, all the muggles, all the shitty frameworks.
Absolutely inclusive. Yes.
All the people I hate.
Right, and that's a big set.
Growing larger by the day.
I need more baskets. To put all the people I hate in them.
And then categorize them.
Yeah.
Different colored sticky notes.
Yeah. Yeah. So the notion of self or any disappointments that may accompany the notion of self is the consequence of converting incomprehensible variability into a very, very small set of practical or impractical truisms, and then occupy that imagination, you know, with aplomb, with attitude. Sounds like someone's being attacked by hungry pterodactyls. Wow, what a cool sound hungry pterodactyls make when they're swooping down on prey. And thankfully, they fly the prey far away so you don't hear the screaming. So if you want something, let's say you want something, or it could be an explanation, it could be a justification, it could be a better spiritual experience, it could be the end of impatience, it could be more or less money, more or less friends, it could be anything, right? So if you want something of a material nature, then maybe you can get it, maybe you can't, maybe you'll be happy once you get it, maybe you'll realize you never really wanted it in the first place. You know, who knows? But the wanting that we're usually talking about is the, you know, the psychological, the psychiatric, the emotional, the spiritual want. Right? The want that has something to do with how I relate to myself, how I'm relating to the weirdness of my life. And it's the wanting that really bothers us. I would say the wanting for something to change is, you know, as worse, maybe worser, not that there's a word called worser, but you get the point. The wanting is worse than the source affliction.
I feel like it masks it, like in some way. I can't see, I was seemingly not aware of the source underlying affliction, of what is apparently apparitionally causing the want.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not really what you want, usually. You don't even know.
You don't even know. Yeah. Right. We don't really know. And yet we're very loyal and fond of our wants. Right? Our spiritual wants, our emotional wants. The things that we either want to get or get rid of. We're fond of them. We can rattle them off. We can tell strangers all about them without the slightest invitation. That's how good we are at ourselves. Might it also be possible, you know, more or less now, to feel yourself without wanting, without explanation or justification, and without having to remedy anything? And feel that to the degree that it's true, not that you're being hypnotized into it, right? And a curious dimensionality may open or appear in your experience. Which has a certain dynamism. You can have a rapport, which is fun to see. You can actually have a rapport with your own realization.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you are yourself.
Uh-huh.
And by relaxing from all impulses of accusation, you could say, you know, feed a cold, starve a fever, right? So you feed fascination and you starve the mind, or you starve the discursive mind, the ruminating mind. And this is not something that, you know, has to hit you from outside yourself. You know, you are the present expression of fascination. You're not just a victim of fascination. You're not an afterthought of fascination. You're not the consequence of fascination. You are this fascination, which suggests that as you feel yourself as interest and attention, as fascination, presently, then you turn your attention toward or on that fascination without an object. You feel yourself as fascination without an object. This is absolutely unequivocally at hand. You don't need to light your incense and put on your shawl and, you know, get on your cushion and do a few gate gate paragates before you groove with this. I mean, it's fun to negotiate with and navigate how reality may work or not work, appreciate the profound variability of all that's arising right now. I mean, that's kind of thrilling, you know. We're scientists, right? We're avid explorers.
Yeah, so even the mind, I mean, I see what you're saying. Like, I don't know, I feel like when you say starve the mind, it's kind of like if you had a block of cheese and you used to put all the cheese to the mind, but now you're like, you can kind of divvy it up and maybe just give the brain a little piece, the mind a little tiny sliver or something. It doesn't have to be the whole thing. But the weirder that this gets, mind's not necessarily really an issue.
Okay. I mean, that's cool.
It's so weird that it doesn't really make
sense. Yeah, I would say that that's an organic expression, revelation, or symptom that the mind is being starved and that you are resting in a more subtle or nuanced degree of inclusivity. You're less concerned.
It's the mind that's being starved, maybe more the, just if I had a certain framework or something that I was really set on, or, you know, something
yes.
like that, but not just the free flow, like creative mind is not being starved.
Right, right, yes.
If anything,
exactly.
It's more like...
Yeah, fixity.
Yes.
Right. Fixity is being starved.
Like stasis in general is being starved.
Yes, right. Yeah, I mean, using the word mind is always, right, you have to be careful as you imply. So in this case, yes, mind can be free-flowing without fixity and, you know, you need not do anything with or about it. So we make no effort. We don't, you know, work so hard to convince ourselves of anything. We're not certain of what it is that we're looking for or hope to gain.
Or just that we have any idea what's going on in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, that's also a certain kind of lucidity that even amidst, you could say, a lot of, you know, data or expressiveness, we begin to be comfortable with not knowing, you know, what this is, where it is, why it is, how it is, when it is. The present moment, as if there were one, is an ongoingly novel opportunity to feel the nature of fascination, and by doing so, release oneself from fixity. It's strange to feel oneself as not the consequence of something, or not justified by an event that occurred and what we're going to do or not do about it. And it's also, you know, perfectly wonderful and bold to say, I don't want to suffer anymore.
It doesn't necessarily be any good, but you can say that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it reflects the quality of your consciousness or the quality of your firsthand experience. You know how if we, let's say we don't want to suffer, and at one level it's a complaint, right? At another level it's attention seeking. At another level it's magical thinking. You know, at another level, you know, it's a cry out, a cry of some kind of, you know, victimization. Or at another level, it's a, you know, it's a bold-faced assertion. I'm fucking done. And each one of those, you know, voices, right? I mean, they elicit, you know, like the next wave, right? Everything is elicits. Everything is solicitous. So the voice that you use, the oomph that you use to make, let's say, a proclamation about something, right, conjures a new wave, a new sine wave in your persona. Especially if nothing is true. Right? If nothing is true, then, you know, making a bold proclamation about anything could be kind of interesting. We don't resolve the fantastic capacity of storytelling through events and circumstances. I mean, we'd like to resolve our suffering in space-time, but we can't. But we can see through the genesis of the belief that you could say, you know, in, not forces us, but seduces us into the presumption that our suffering is so, that it's real, that it's the result of something or things. See, that's all, right? Isn't that all symptom identification? Why don't we spend equal time seeing through the myth of symptom identification as we do demanding, supplicating, or insisting that our symptoms abate?
Well, it reminds me of the how free do you want to be?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's like it's like how to what extent are you able to let go of she that suffers?
Yes, you're right. You know, she, he, it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, and if really, if it turns out that that interests you, right? This, let's call it a letting go, right? An investigation, an inquiry, a penetration, a catharsis, right? A crisis. If we're interested in any of those occurring, then the fruition of that interest happens when? Well, it has to happen now, right? We can't just have a thrilling conversation, put a few ideas in your cheeks like a squirrel packs their, you know, cheeks with a bunch of nuts. You're right. You're, since this is where you live, how about here and right about now? Then any catharsis or crisis or penetration that one might wish to do would best occur now. And even if you just get the sense, even if you can smell the aroma of how you create yourself or one creates oneself from moment to moment through rumination and discursive association and, you know, storytelling. I'm not saying any of those things are bad. But those are symptoms of how we create ourselves, you know, in the present. And if we get a glimpse of it, how we create ourselves in the present, then I dare say it begins to open up possibilities of, let's say, doing that less frequently and with less confidence. If you don't see how you create yourself in the present moment, and if you continue or one continues to think that they are the victim of circumstances and events, well, then they'll never crack that nut because circumstances and events keep coming at you. And as Francine said, you know, there's more and more to dislike from moment to moment.
from day to day. So out of control. It's, and my response to them is so out of control. It's like, oh my God, it's a train wreck.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure, consciousness is a train wreck.
A beautiful train wreck, but
it is. It really is. I mean, it's a mellifluous, poetic, incredibly weird train wreck. And we don't, and see, you could say our difficulty is that we're trying to take a train traveling at the speed that it's traveling, that has already left the tracks a long time ago, and try to get it back on the tracks.
in a very specific way.
Like, yeah, and right. Specific. Right, it's like, get this back on the tracks, and the train is running at 120 miles per hour, you know. I don't know, how many horsepower does a train have? Quite a number of them. And we're trying to, like, you know, with our crappy attitude, convince this train to get back on the tracks. And it can't hear you because all it hears is its own choo, choo, choo. Its whistle is so loud and so bold. It can't hear us, you know, screaming and complaining, hey, get back on the tracks. So wanting defines us, quarrel defines us, story defines us, right? Packing an attitude defines us. And I'm not saying any of those things are wrong, are less than, or that they should even stop. They needn't. It's just a matter of seeing the profound geometry of how we sign on, right, to being a durable creature that wants things or worse, myself, to be different. What a buzzkill. You know, this kind of investigation stops having any utility for what we might refer to as the egoic self. It doesn't have any utility for the primate that wants to stop suffering. And that's why it's so easy, you know, to dismiss. Because I want to go somewhere, meet someone, have a conversation, and adopt a practice that will assist me with the end or cessation of suffering.
Basically, I want to do something with my life.
Yeah, I want to get in. I want to put the trainman's hat on, you know, tell the guy that's shoveling the coal to, like, you know, fire it up, and I want to steer this thing back on track. But there's a certain kind of, you know, sacred frustration that's going to show up on your screen. And that sacred frustration is that doing anything about this at all won't amount to anything. You have to go through this portal of sacred frustration and complaint. To get a taste of your own emancipated nature. And one way that that occurs is that we stop trying to get something from this. We stop insisting on having a steering wheel, or that a conversation like this one should have any utility. And even though it's a little uncomfortable when that sacred frustration arises, it's a good day. I mean, we don't really want to feel it, you know. It's not like I go, you know, to the church or the synagogue and say, Lord, please give me the worst sacred frustration I can bear. Right? We don't pray for it. Instead, we tend to pray for amelioratives, for ease, comfort, and security. You know, cessation of suffering or bad feeling. We don't pray for sacred frustration so that it can do what it does with us and unhinge us from needing this to be about anything. I think that's what Guru Prahlad meant when he said, oh, you want God? Do you? Well, pray for trouble.
It's funny because I feel like when I first encountered Night Sky Song or whatever, I was looking for a different quality of people that might be interested in this. And now, like, the other day, I was talking to some, you know, older woman who her whole life was just failure, 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 failure. And I was like, this woman might be interested.
Isn't that interesting?
I changed. I'm like, actually, it doesn't matter necessarily if they're interested in, like, spirituality at all. But if their life's a total failure and they're, like, 65.
Yeah, really. Yeah, line them up.
Does it matter if they have a Buddha statue?
Nope. No. Transcendence is spelled F-A-I-L-U-R-E. Total failure. We you know, that's our rub. We're really reluctant to go to total failure. Even the insistence that we should stop suffering is more pride. It's easier to complain over and over and over again about not wanting to suffer the way that we do, because that's just a clever form of deferral. It stands in the way, metaphorically only, of total failure.
Well, it seems like the suffering is from a fixity. It stems from a fixity of sorts. That's very simplistic, but let's say maybe it stems from a fixity. And then you're trying to remedy fixity. Instead of seeing that whatever you fixed is totally make-believe.
Yep. Yes. Yep. And total failure is absolutely luscious. The total failure is this very presence. There's absolutely no delay. There's no delay between the thrill of total failure and the opening of a transcendent portal. They're one and the same. You know, you go through the catharsis of total failure and you get a certain glint in your eye. It's like you've exhausted delusion. Right? You're not a beggar any longer. You're not a poser any longer. You're not justifying yourself or raising yourself up or comparing yourself to anyone or anything. Total failure completely releases you from, you know, what's referred to as the games we play. And there's a certain kind of intelligence in total failure. There's a certain wild nature that gets, you know, released or lit with total failure. And it sure as hell has nothing at all to do with things going my way.
It's just like divine. It's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And also tormenting.
Sure. That's how it rolls. Get used to it. So the delusion of continuity of self is fed by the lamentation of my suffering and the insistence that someday my suffering shall abate. And we wonder, why hasn't my suffering abated? Well, it's easy, because you're interested in having it abate. And as long as you're interested in some kind of a state change, then you're a big shot. You're a man or woman about town. You haven't taken a knee to total failure. One is still bargaining, looking for a handout, looking for a bailout. And that movement, conjures supports the idea of one being a separate self, one primate amongst many, with, you know, lamentable circumstances or anxiety disorders or addictive tendencies or, you know, depressive facility or whatever it is. Like, yeah, okay, fantastic. You don't have to be good. You don't have to be better. uh, You don't have to prove to yourself that you're already transcendent. Failure's the only way. All other strategies, you know, have a... There's a cleverness component. There's a refusal. We could say suffering ends when there's no longer any sign of refusal. Right? When there's no sign of if only or yes but.
It's kind of really the same thing as splitting it up. Just, you have to split it up to be able to say any of those things.
Yes, you have to take a position and place yourself in the midst of this cacophony as an entity.
Yeah, it just seemed like nested layers of just bizarreness. You know, first you gotta take yourself to be an entity, then when you're an entity, you got an opinion, and then, you know, it just...
Yeah, definitely.
Like, bizarre.
Yeah, and all of that, you know, and we can articulate it in a, you know, in fun ways. All of that is spontaneously, you know, effervescently present.
Yeah.
Right? This can dart into any nuance of identity that it cares to dart into, and it's not asking you for permission to do it.
No. Not even a hint of permission.
Yeah, not a hint, right. Yeah.
There's nothing to gain permit, you know, it's like, I mean, it's such a weird thing to think about what you're even talking about when you say permission, you know, like as an entity. It's a bizarre, I mean, today when my heart started beating and the, you know, it's like, what, is it my head? Is it my heart? Is it my physiology? Hey, it was the whole thing that just occurred at once.
Right. Yes. So, yes. You're like, an explosion of profundity.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. You can't parse it. Right? I mean, it's every moment is so spontaneously full of whatever it is, however it is, as it is that we can only parse it by lying.
By thinking we know something.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't actually tell the truth about something that doesn't stick around long enough to be parsed. So the only way to parse this or convince ourselves of a certain kind of event that occurred and our role in that event is to lie. You know, it's like Bill O'Reilly.
One aspect of it, or a couple, you know, you pick a couple things, fixate, and then tell a story, a fixated story around it.
Yes, and the event itself was, you know, an ambiguous wonder field. And right now, if we're telling a story, we're doing so in the midst of an ambiguous wonder field. And this is how we self-hypnotize and then invite each other into, call it cooperative hypnotism. That's why one can be frustrated by, let's say, going to a recovery meeting or a bake sale or, you know, to a church discussion group. Because we're going to end up in a cooperative kind of hypnotism that may no longer serve our interests or our needs or our aspirations. And we might try to continue to milk those associations, you know, and or compromise so that we can hang out in those environments in a neutral or relaxed or even enjoyable manner. But it may turn out that we just can't. That the vibration that we're coming in contact with is a vibration of quarrel, a vibration of complaint, a vibration of insufficiency, and a vibration of, you know, some kind of remedial commitment, right? Total failure is different than an addictive bottom. It just is. I mean, addictive bottoms are, you know, they're the shit. And they can be horrific, especially if, you know, you've injured someone by, you know, getting into an accident under the influence of alcohol or whatever. Total bottoms are the shit, although they can be real tragedies. And they may hopefully be useful in moving us into a road of a different level of esteem, a different level of behavior, a different level of surrender, right? But that is different, though, contributes to what I'm referring to as total ruination.
I was just thinking of my own situation. I'm like, which would be like when you hit bottom and you've hit the addictive bottom and then you tried to fix it and that failed miserably.
Yep.
Repeatedly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This consciousness is very elastic. You say it's very durable. It can hit 1,000 bottoms, participate in profound recoveries, and be unbearably egoistic, you know, till its dying day. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's just we're that good. You know, we're that elastic. We're that durable. That we can go through profound crises, profound tragedies, profound catharses, and still, you know, remain like glued together. But something else occurs when a different quality or texture of ruination is set loose. To feel oneself completely released from wanting, from becoming. From needing even to persist.
That's kind of like the death thing. Like, well, then you won't persist anymore, and that's bad.
Yep. I mean, so much interesting and evocative feeling arises when we, let's say, are invited to release from, you know, the inertia of ourselves. Invited to release from mind, from thought, from desire, from body, from regret. There's an underlying intimacy that accompanies the magical nature of observation, fascination, being with, engagement, subjective nature, radiant presence, traveling lighter. There's a profundity, and that's what we're fucking with. Or, more appropriately, it for sure is fucking with us.
More appropriately, it is itself fucking with itself.
Yep, absolutely, yes.
It goes both ways, and it likes it a variety of ways.
It does go both ways. Any questions or curiosities from the entourage before we close the call down?
Well, what if we didn't have any preferences?
Yeah, what if?
You'd be dead and gone.
Huh, that doesn't even
mean... Okay. That's one idea, right? Dead and gone. Yeah. I mean, not that it's... You know, it's clearly not preferences that are responsible for your, you know, continuity as a viable bio-entity. It's not preferences that are keeping you going. Well, without keeping us up too late, thank you everyone for...
Wait, does Steve have our outro now that Steve, he's back?
Steve has an outro.
I'm not prepared.
I mean, we haven't had it for like weeks, so...
Well, we haven't had it for weeks. We should sure play it if we haven't had it for weeks.
I'm not prepared. Give me a moment.
I might have one. There we are.
This is such a good song for our group. The theme song of my day.
Ow!
Night Sky Sangha.